Welcome to the Patriot League's Pillar Citizen Spotlight. My name is Aaron Robertson, and I'm the president of the Patriot League, where we work to advance four pillars of moral truth that we believe sustain America's ability to survive and thrive. Since 2009, we've been building the Pillar Citizen community, and we're joined today by one of its leading members, Mr. Bob Morane, who we're so pleased to have with us today. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's an honor.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Mr. Morane's extensive community leadership includes having served in the local stake presidency of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And his remarks are not intended to be an official statement of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but reflect his sincerely held religious and personal beliefs. So with that, we'd like to start off by asking you, what's your primary motivation for believing in and defending the Pillar Principles?
Well, it's an interesting question. I've not considered too often the idea of motivation for belief.
Okay.
Belief is, for me, it's what you find to be true. And true is, you know, things as they are, as they have been, as they will be. It's not something that changes.
Okay.
For me, the pillar principles that you have, the traditional marriage, parental rights, religious liberty, the humanity of the unborn.
Very good. You got all four.
I've tried to memorize this for a week now.
Yeah. We're going to raise the pay.
To me, these things are self-evidentiary. They're families are the center of society. Without parental guidance to their children grow up without principles, without skills and abilities, all the things that are necessary for a functioning society.
Right.
This has been borne out in, you know, very recent times with so many fatherless families in our community that we are seeing that the children are not becoming, you know, self-sustaining.
Exactly.
and other kinds of things. Not to mention, you know, propensity for crime or other kinds of things. So family is at the heart of everything in human life to me. And so these principles just support the family, and that's why I think they're so important. The notion of religious liberty is really just freedom of conscience.
Yes.
May we believe and live the way we believe we should, you know, feel that we should believe and live.
Exactly.
And that's fundamental to the operation of a family. If parents have a set of principles that they believe will help their children live better, then they should be free to pass those principles, traditions, activities, whatever, on to their children so that they can do that. They should also be free to exercise them in their own life. If this is how I believe my life will be better, whether it's this earthly life or my immortal life,
yes,
that I should be free to exercise that. And that's, to me, that's what the fundamentals of these pillar principles are, and that's why I want to defend them.
Okay, that's good. And you mentioned the criminal tendency, or something, I forgot the word you used, of young people who aren't being raised in moral principles. And your statement is well documented in, you know, the statistics and the facts that's absolutely happening, unfortunately.
Well, when they're left in a vacuum of principles that will work to establish a good life, they have to figure out somewhere.
And, exactly.
And when their peers or their parents or their schools aren't giving them something better,
right,
you go to the least common. Well, I'll take what I need or take what I want. Right.
So sad. Yeah. Yeah. It really is a failure of the adult community. I mean, not to say that these juveniles or young people are innocent. They're responsible for their actions. But, and I've said this to my family, I know, for years in discussing this, shame on the parents who are not loving and investing in their children and teaching them. That's an indictment upon the adult generation, I think.
On adults generally, not just the parents. Think of a single parent who, because of the lack of support of the society around them, doesn't have the time or ability to pass on these principles.
Yes.
Or perhaps they weren't taught, you know, if it's multi-generational now, they weren't even taught before. So we as an adult community really need to find a way to support families. And I think that's what these principles are all about.
Yes, sir. Exactly. So why, in your view, should the Latter-day Saint community not only believe in, it's one thing to say, yeah, you know, we believe in this, but actually advocate for them and maybe get involved in some level for them?
Well, as I already mentioned, these principles support family and our own religious liberty, which is at the center of the teachings of my church. Okay. We believe that family is supreme of all associations. Yeah. My relationship with my God is even a familial relationship. He's my father. Yeah. The Savior is my brother who has come to redeem me. Every human on the planet is either a literal brother or sister in a premortal sense. And we've all come here to experience mortality and gain faith and skills and so forth, but especially to establish families.
Okay.
That's kind of the fundamental tenet
of our
faith.
Back to the family again.
Right? Yeah. Well, and so in our faith, church without family isn't anything.
I mean,
again, going back to that premortal family, the heavenly family, where my Father in heaven is really my Father. And so supporting family is truly, you know, living my religion.
Okay.
And
that's a critical point too, right? Because if our culture or our laws make it so that your community can't exercise its beliefs about family teaching them, it's really a complete violation of your religious liberty at the same time.
Right. If somehow my parental rights were stripped from me.
Right.
Or from my children and my grandchildren, and that they cannot teach their children, then you've taken away the opportunity to exercise our religion.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's significant. And I'm sure that we could probably say most, it's true for most religions as well, but especially and specifically within your community.
Right.
That's just like one and the same.
Right. And it's not necessarily teaching what we think of as religious principles. Okay. You know, what is a Godhead? Is it a Trinity or something else? Or, you know, what is the nature of atonement for sin?
Sure.
Those are all important things. I hope I would always have the privilege of teaching that to my children. But to teach other principles, whether, you know, work is an honorable principle.
Okay, yeah.
Whether we should be generous and kind to others, or whether it's okay to steal, that in some senses is religious, but in some sense it's just, how does a community work?
Right.
How does a family work? And, you know, how do you prosper in the real world? These are things
exactly.
that hopefully parents will always have the privilege of teaching to their children.
Exactly. And I use the phrase to sort of encapsulate what you're talking about, at least the way I think of it, is life skills. You're conveying life skills.
Absolutely.
How do you live in this life? And parents were the ones that brought the child into the world. The government had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's sure, if we're talking about bona fide child abuse, you know, and there's tragic cases, you know, in the nation. Well, sure, that's a different story. I'm sure that you would agree. But we're not. But today we have people saying, well, it's child abuse to teach your child that if he's a boy, he's a boy.
Yeah.
Because you've now imposed your sexual ethics upon this child.
Right.
We're starting to twist what, you know, child abuse is.
Yeah.
But if there was, and it certainly happens, then we would all advocate, yeah, certainly the authorities would have an appropriate role in that instance.
Right. But again, the adults in our society need to be there to support the children.
Yes.
And but we do need to be reasonable about what is appropriate parental guidance and what is not. And,
yes.
And as you said, you know, abuse is never appropriate.
Yes, so. No, exactly. So, Mr. Moraine, there may be some Latter-day Saints who say members of your religious community shouldn't concern themselves with advocating for the pillar principles because they're a distraction to more important spiritual work. I have a feeling of what you're going to say just because of what you said so far, but I'll let you answer. So how do you respond to that?
Well, I already did, I
guess.
Yeah,
you kind of already did.
In my faith, since the family is central to the whole plan of exaltation,
yes.
It's the plan of happiness, the plan of salvation centers in the family. And so these pillar principles support the family. It allows the community to recognize the family as being supreme. And so that is a matter of living our faith. I don't think it's a distraction of our faith. Now, if people are asking whether they should become involved, you know, in an advocacy kind of position, a political position,
sure.
or, you know, an organization like yours, where we strive to promulgate certain principles, I would say they need to measure that on their own.
Right.
If they've got, you know, a family at home with seven young children and they're trying to, kind of personal maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they don't have the resources to really devote a lot of time and energy to that. And that's got to be their call. On the other hand, if they do have time or resource that they can help others see the importance of preserving these principles, I would suggest that they seriously look into it.
Yeah, yeah, very good. So it seems that those who are working to undermine these principles that we're talking about, they've got most of the momentum in the culture. I don't think anyone here would argue with that. So should we just accept that? If we don't just accept it, how would we go about changing that reality?
Okay. There was a word in your question that I think is important. It seems that they have the momentum.
Okay.
If what we're looking at is popular culture, the media, you know, whether it be movies or music or books or other things like that, then perhaps they have the momentum.
Okay.
But maybe they've got all of it. I don't know. But I think if you look into the lives of individuals and families, we'll find many, many, many more who actually believe these principles, whether they've articulated them or not.
Okay, right.
How many parents don't believe that they should have the right to direct the education and growth of their children?
Exactly.
How many families don't believe that they should have the right to live as families without interference from outsiders?
Right.
You know, how many people of faith just take it as a given that they ought to be able to live their faith?
Imagine that.
And they're shocked that somebody would think, no, this isn't a time for prayer, or you know, well,
don't bring that in here.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah.
That kind of thing. To think that because a book of scripture happens to say that a certain practice is good or a certain practice is not, you can't bring that up in a public square discussion. That's just foreign, I think, to the concept of most people.
That's very good.
So while the popular media portrays a counterculture that seems to be winning, I'm not sure that I believe that in the hearts of the people who actually are trying to live their lives day to day.
It's very good. And in fact, folks, that's something that, that we as an organization have tried to, as you say, promulgate as well. So you put that very, very succinctly. It's sort of like the, you know, the illusion that's being thrown out there. Mm-hmm. And if you look behind the curtain a little bit, wow, there's a lot of good American people, citizens. We can come together on these principles. And you would think that you and I are the last two people in our state that care about these if you listen to, as you said, the popular media.
Right.
But it's not true.
That's right.
And so that's important, folks. We've got to keep in perspective. And sometimes you got to turn the switch off or find an alternate source of your information if the information you're getting is just being canned to constantly tell you, well, sexuality, the truth about sexuality doesn't matter. Marriage doesn't matter. You know, these sorts of things. We've got to pay attention to who we're allowing to speak into our mind.
Right. And most particularly, especially for those in faith, we need to be listening to God.
Yeah.
You know, not just out of the books, but let's silence our hearts, be still, and know that He is God, and listen to what He tells us.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Another thing that you said that kind of, you know, piqued my attention was the fact that you said a lot of people, it's almost be surprising or shocking to them if someone came with a presentation of an idea that, you know, you can't, you know, hold your views, you can't raise your family, etc. And I wonder if that's often part of the problem, because it's so outlandish. A lot of people maybe don't give a lot of credibility or credence to that it's a clear and present danger. I mean, a lot of people sort of doing the la 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 la, ignoring what they're hearing. And as a culture, we're at the point where we can't do that anymore, right? We have to actually realize that there's real people actually trying to strip these rights away.
We've lived in such a free society for so long that the concept of abridging our rights is foreign to us.
Right.
You know, we watch a movie about, you know, 1930s, 1940s Germany, and the fear that a person would have of speaking their mind in a public place, or even in their own home, for fear that their children would report them to the authorities at school. These things seem so impossible. But they've happened. They've happened many times, not just in Germany, but in Russia, in China, and other places, mm-hmm. right? It's naive to think it couldn't happen here, or there aren't people that are trying to push in a direction which is counter to what we've always experienced in our lifetimes.
Exactly.
But the reality is the freedom we live under today is a rare, rare opportunity in the history of humanity.
Oh, man.
And to think that it would always be perpetuated without somebody trying to defend it is a rather naive position.
Well said. Yes. So, Mr. Murray, earlier this month, Latter-day Saint leadership officially opposed a piece of legislation in the state of Utah that, should it be passed, would prohibit some citizens from providing certain counseling services for minors who are struggling with unwanted same-gender attraction. This is, of course, as we were just saying, the parents would be approving of the counseling. So the leadership cited the legislation's failure to safeguard, quote, religious beliefs, end quote, and that it doesn't account for, quote, important realities of gender identity in the development of children,
right.
end quote. So we're going to assume that you agree with the decision. Please let us know if you don't. But can you help us understand, if you do support it, why is this the right decision that has been made by leadership?
So I won't say that I've read the entire piece of legislation. I haven't.
Oh, come on. Yeah. You haven't read every little. I haven't either.
I looked it up. It was about 26 pages. I did not have time to read it all.
Right.
The statement from the church that I read emphasized two or three points. One is taking into account parental, approval for those things, taking into account religious liberties. But they also emphasize the importance of not allowing abuse of children. And, part of this legislation was about so-called, gender identity, counseling or switching
right.
or changing. The church has always taught an individual's agency is truly critical. We must respect people's choice.
Okay.
To force someone to change their mind isn't really changing their mind.
Yeah, it's not really.
And so this statement by the church that I read was really emphasizing that they are totally against any of those violent or abusive sorts of treatments
right.
that would be, allowed or disallowed by this legislation.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the thing they emphasized the most. Let's respect the agency, even of children. Now, that said, we need to respect the rights of parents and religious organizations and so forth to give teaching.
Yes.
While it may be my teenager's choice to to identify as a different gender, mm-hmm. I should have the right to express why I feel that would be good or bad.
Right.
What I think the consequences in their life, or in their eternal life, might be.
If you're the parent, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If I have someone that I trust that would be able to articulate things better than I would, that I would want to, get mm-hmm. my child in connection with, mm-hmm. I should have that right.
Yes.
And I believe that's really the spirit of it. One thing that I've very much appreciated about when the church takes positions on legislation, it's usually on a moral, it's always on a moral basis, mm-hmm. but it's also in an attempt to identify the bigger picture and to make sure that we're not infringing on the rights of some to strengthen the rights or protect the rights of others.
Right.
We all have rights, and they all need to be protected. And I think the advice of the church to step back, they've offered some suggestions for amendments, or step back and rewrite it. Let's
right.
consider it. Of course, we don't want to be forcing anyone, and I think that's part of this legislation. They're afraid that people are going to force children or youth into choosing the gender that somebody else wants them to choose.
And often that's the case with a young person,
right?
Unfortunately,
whether it be a parent who believes in biological gender and they have a child who believes something different,
mm-hmm.
well, is it really the parent's prerogative to force that child to acknowledge, no, I'm a boy, right? Or is it the parent's job to counsel, to love, to lead, trusting that if they have, you know, good teachings, that they'll be accepted. And so there are some who are afraid that parents are going to force the child, and some parents unfortunately do. And I think the church is very sensitive to that, and that's one of the reasons they, you know, would favor some legislation. On the other hand,
and when you say forced to do, what, help me understand. So forced to go to that counseling session, or what do you?
Or forced it, or if you're going to live, sleep, eat in our home, then you're going to dress like a boy or whatever, and you're going to talk like a boy, and you're going to stop thinking or saying that you think you're something else. You know, again, there's got to be, you know, some limit, and you know at some age, you know, a child is emancipated and know, and that sort of thing, but I think there are concerns when parents abusively try to persuade their children.
We talked earlier in the conversation. We don't want to subvert. We would never support you or I, you know, bona fide child abuse.
If a parent wants to beat their children for dressing inappropriately, or if they want to send them to a counselor with shock treatment or whatever, that's not appropriate. And I think that was one concern the church really does have. On the other hand, if the fear is overwhelmingly that all parents are going to be excessive in their parenting styles, then it's really easy to pass legislation which limits the right of parents to have any input, and that's not right.
I think a lot of this, I'm guessing you'll agree with this. A lot of what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, the shock treatment or whatever these extreme scenarios are, it really is a red herring. If you look at the organizations that have operated in this country that have been known, whether they existed in the past and don't exist now, or the ones that do exist now, and there's not a ton of them that help with these issues, very few of these, any of the reputable larger ones, engaged in this kind of extreme behavior, you know, let's put your finger in a light socket to try to resolve this issue, or some ridiculous scenario like this. Often these agencies, these counseling scenarios, involve conversations and discussions. It's not a matter of physical torture, you know. So the folks who want to advocate for children's gender fluidity and that kind of stuff often want to take those extreme examples and act as though that's the norm. And I think that's, if I'm understanding you correctly, what the leadership's position is saying. We want to be clear, we don't support the extreme of child abuse, like you're saying. That's a big concern for the leadership of the Latter-day Saint community. At the same time, though, if I'm understanding what you're saying, we are very concerned that the attempt to ban child abuse, as we just kind of discussed what that was in that context, doesn't end up with the result that the conversations, the scriptures, the advice, the life experience can't be shared to that young person. Is that, am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, I think so. And and some of the language in the statute was vague, so it's really hard to know how it would be applied. And so they've asked that if they're going to proceed, the legislature at least needs to give some more guidance to how it should be applied. You know, you mentioned this whole idea of abuse. And what is abuse? And we've talked about verbal abuse. I think all would agree that, you know, children at school shouting each other down because they don't believe in, you know, calling them pejorative names or something because of their choice of dress or whatever is inappropriate. But is it ever inappropriate to suggest that your choice of, you know, of dress or, you know,
lifestyle,
or anything is probably not the best course of action. I think if all you do is label, you just say that hate speech is illegal, but you don't define hate speech, then you've left everything open for, you know, shutting down all speech. But even if you start defining it, then you have the question of who gets to define it.
So it's risky business.
It is, entirely. And I think the church is simply asked, let's step back on this piece of legislation and others like it.
Yes.
And let's consider the positions of all people.
Yeah. Exactly. We need to tread lightly because the law has the power to coerce.
Yep.
And so, like the leadership is saying, it better be darn specific or else we really shouldn't be supporting it, because then it can be weaponized against people.
Yeah. Inadvertently, even if people don't consider it to be a weapon, it's just whoever is in a position of authority at any given time,
yeah,
if they have the right to interpret, they will do it according to their beliefs. And if they're not the same as my belief or your belief or his belief, somebody's going to feel oppressed.
Exactly. Well, and if I could for a moment, I want to turn the tables on those who would come against, I guess, our position, the position of the leadership of your religious community, certainly the position of our organization, who want to constantly act as though our community, the Pillar Citizen community, is somehow advocating for child abuse because we affirm a child's gender. And by the way, what we're talking about is affirming. People say, well, someone's gender is assigned at birth. And I love how I've heard this said, that it's not assigned, it's recognized.
Yeah.
Big difference,
right,
between the two. But in the sense that the accusation is put towards our community, I want to turn the tables for a moment and let's get real here. The real child abuse that's happening is by those who are advocating this, and let me be specific in what I mean. When we talk about the case in Texas, I believe this 7-year-old boy, I don't know if you've been following this story at all, but
just a little.
Yeah, there's a boy, I believe he's 7 years old, in the state of Texas, and he's just one, unfortunately, of so many tragic cases where his mother is wanting him to start taking, you know, go through the gender transition. So that involves hormones and all these things. And as that process goes, that child at 7 years old is going to have things done to his body that very likely will never be reversible, depending upon how, in his instance, how far this gender transition goes. Now, we understand if it's maybe gone for a little while and it's sort of turned off the process, then maybe it's not completely irreversible. But when you start doing surgical procedures and stuff like that, how could we not say as American citizens that having a 7-year-old make that decision and then going through with changing their gender, trying to, if that's not child abuse, I don't understand what is child abuse, because that person has, in many cases, learned to read several years ago. Okay, they're learning to ride a bike when they're whatever, 4 or 5, and now we're going to have them. So I just think that's, if we're going to start throwing accusations around, I don't think they belong with our community. We're trying to preserve religious liberty, and we're trying to protect the truth about our God-given gender. Yeah. And I don't see how that is child abuse.
Well, I think that's part of this whole the thing we were talking about, definitions. If they're not precise, then it's easy to call anything abuse. In our faith, we believe that gender is an essential characteristic of our eternal being.
Okay.
We believe that we lived as intelligent beings before coming to Earth. We were spirits. We've come here, obtained, physical bodies. Mm-hmm. And after this life, we will still continue to exist. And we believe that our gender is an essential characteristic.
So it goes through that whole process, according to the teaching.
Okay. Right. So to me, it would be abusive to not allow someone to share that understanding of the nature of humanity with their children.
Because that violates with their religious freedom to
Teach
that. Well,
it violates that child's right to know the truth about who he is.
Mm.
Right? I mean, it's one thing to look between your legs and say, well, I'm this or I'm that. Right. It's another to feel your feelings and suggest that maybe I'm this or that.
Right.
But it's another to have an understanding that scripture and prophetic teachings truly instruct who we are and the purpose of life and those kinds of things. And to not allow that to be shared with an individual who would otherwise be receptive to understand that, I think is abusive.
Yes.
Now, I don't feel I have the right to force that belief on anyone.
Sure.
I mean, if I knock on your door as a missionary and say, hey, I'd love to share my understanding with you, and you say, yeah, I'm really not interested, well, that's your choice. Mm-hmm. People will say, well, the children don't have that choice. They don't have the right to close the door when somebody starts preaching to them or so forth. Well, that's true. But they also don't get to shut the door when I tell them that, you know, it's good to eat vegetables.
It's bedtime or whatever else.
Right?
Right.
Is it wrong for me to teach my children what I believe is good for them?
Exactly.
Right? Now, do they have the right to accept it or not accept it? I believe they do.
Right.
When will they ultimately have the understanding whether they should or shouldn't? Well, that may be, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now.
Mm.
But to suggest that a child on their current feelings at age 7 or, or even 17 knows everything they need to know to make serious decisions about, like, you know, am I going to mutilate my body or otherwise because someone else has suggested that it might be a good thing.
Right.
I think it's right for a parent to be able to be involved in that discussion and to share their beliefs so that that child isn't swayed by things which are not natural for them.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Right.
Now, again, I don't believe it's right for the parent to be forcing that child to live the way they want to, but to force a parent not to be able to share why they believe that and what they believe, I think that is, you know, backwards for a society that's centered in families.
Yeah. And we got to remember, 18 is coming. The clock, I don't know about your house, but the clock always spins on mine, unless the battery dies. I mean, time is going. So we got to, okay, there's a concern, well, this 10-year-old has gender dysphoria or whatnot. First of all, we should have compassion on disorders of sexual development, not a firm confusion.
Right.
That's not compassion. But the calendar is on the calendar. When that child turns 18, if they choose at that stage of life to go, like you said, any direction they're going to go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
They can make those changes. But when they're a minor, and especially we're talking less than 10 years old, but I would argue definitely up to 18, then there's an element of, it's called parental responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
A parent is, we believe, is failing their duty to their child not to teach them, as you said, to the best of their ability, what's right and true and good.
Yeah.
Right? And so if they're not doing that, then they're being restricted from fulfilling that responsibility as well.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in your personal view, Mr. Moraine, what should be the primary factor that the Pillar Citizen community considers when voting for a candidate for public offices? Kind of a tough question, but let me detail a little more. So for you, does the candidate have to be a member of the Latter-day Saint community to get support?
Well, if that was true, I wouldn't vote for very many people. We haven't had very many members of our church running for office.
Right.
They do occur, but no, I believe that fundamentally, and our scriptures, you know, support this, we look for individuals who are good, who are wise, who are honest.
Okay.
That's what I look for first. Are these good people, people that care about others, that want to do well by other people?
Mm-hmm.
Are they wise? And that's an interesting, you know, word anymore. What is wisdom? But do they look at the big picture? Do they look at the long-term effects of decisions or of proposals? That's becoming more and more rare.
Sure.
Knee-jerk reaction in politics seems to be the order of the day. I look for people who look beyond that, who are looking for what benefits society generally, what supports those principles which are foundational to our freedom, to our safety, our well-being, and not in it just for themselves. And then the next one is, you know, are they honest?
Okay.
Do they say what they mean and mean what they say? Do they contradict themselves when they're talking to one group and then another?
Come over here. Right.
Now, that's not to say that they would always say the same thing to different groups.
Sure.
I mean, if they're addressing a church group that they know is worried about religious freedom, then they're going to talk more about religious freedom.
Right.
If they're talking to a veterans group that is worried about national safety and so forth, they're going to talk more about safety. But if they go to the veterans group and say, you know, by golly, to defend our nation, we're not going to let anybody believe what they believe, and then they go to the church and say, well, of course, you can believe what you believe, that's not honest, right?
Okay, got you. Yeah.
And so I look for people who are good, wise, and honest. Beyond that, I recognize that nobody is going to believe exactly the way I believe, even if they're in my own church,
or my own family. I think most of us, yeah.
And as I pointed out to other people, I don't always agree with myself. I mean, can anyone actually say they've never changed their mind on
something? That's a great point. That's a great point.
You know, if I were to vilify everybody who didn't believe like me, then I'd have to vilify myself because I didn't believe this way.
Right.
You know, at some point in the past, I probably won't believe everything I believe today, tomorrow, or you know, in 10 years.
Right.
There has to be diversity. So when you're looking at a candidate and who to support, you look for the one that you believe will most effectively implement your vision of principles for government and community.
Okay.
I may not agree 100%, but if I believe this candidate is going to do the best job of supporting what I believe to be good,
right,
then that's the candidate I'm going to vote for.
Right.
You know, some people say, I can't vote for any of them because none of them believe exactly the way I believe. Well, then all you're doing is saying that you're going to let other people
right.
choose whether the one who most likely will support you or least likely will support you will get elected. And I think that's a rather naive way to think that we're going to be protected in our lives.
Exactly. Well, and if I heard you correctly, so the three were good, wise, and honest,
mm-hmm.
right? So good, wise, and honest. So let's be honest. People from every community, religious community, or whatever part of our society, sometimes they're a part of the community, but they're not honest.
Sure.
And I'm sure, I'm not to offend your community, but I'm sure you would say there's people even in your community who identify with your community, but they're just not an honest person.
Sure.
And I would say the same for my community. I think we can all recognize that just having a label, well, this person's a member, let's say I'm a Muslim. Well, this person's a Muslim, that makes them automatically good, wise, and honest to what you're saying.
Right.
You have to look beyond just the religious label. Hopefully they have that, it's a bonus. But you have to look to those other elements too.
You want to look to see how a person is actually going to govern when they're in office.
Right.
And that's an individual choice. You know, in our church, the leadership is very careful not to try to dictate to political officers or governmental officers who, you know, may be members of our church. They're not going to say, well, because you're a member of the church, you've got to act this way, you've got to vote this way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that. They refuse to do that.
Okay.
And I think as members of the church or members of any community, we need to be similar. We need to look at the individual and say, that individual is going to act the way that individual believes is right.
Right.
And whether they are members of my church or somebody else's church or no church at all, they have their own idea of how things should go. I need to look at that individually and ask whether okay. that person is most likely to govern in a way that I believe will benefit society.
Okay.
Now, I don't believe any human, you know, mortal, infallible as we are, is going to govern perfectly.
Yeah, right.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
And so if I'm holding out for that perfect candidate, I may as well just give up.
Good point.
But if I give up, that means that others can choose, and if they don't have the same values I do, they're going to choose somebody who's going to govern in a different way. For years, you know, maybe before your time, the phrase "the silent majority" was used a lot. And you know, earlier I said I believe that most individual and families would be surprised to think that somebody wants to take away their religious
yes.
liberty.
Yeah.
The problem is that many of them, even as they begin to understand that, still remain quiet. And in a political arena, those who speak have the influence.
Wow.
And so if you make the movies and make the music and write the books and write the newspapers and so on and write the blogs, you tend to have influence. And those people who haven't really thought things out are often swayed by the arguments, which have some persuasive value,
right.
Whether it be factual or emotional, they all have something persuasive in them.
Yes.
And if those of us who feel differently don't speak up, then those who haven't thought about it in any deep way tend to side with the popular view.
Well said.
If only to not feel unpopular.
Yeah.
And so if you don't feel like you have a good reason to vote the other way, then, well, I'll vote with everybody else.
Yeah.
And so I think we really need to be very careful about, you know, putting, you know, strict criteria for who we're going to vote for.
We would say to the community that just because someone is good on these four principles, kind of along the lines of what you're saying, doesn't mean they're qualified for public office.
That's so true, too.
So I think we have agreement on that piece.
Yeah,
and
right.
Like Mr. Moran's saying, there's going to be diversity as far as how someone approaches all the nuances. But, you know, you do have to look at everything. We would just argue
right.
that these are four,
well, these are absolutely,
the more core.
They're absolutely very, very, very important principles.
Yeah. So given the current legal, cultural climate with respect to the pillars, should Latter-day Saints actively consider if they should run for public office?
I think they should. I did personally. A few years back, I ran for office. I ran twice. I didn't win. Everybody knows that, I think.
Darn.
Because
I think you would have done good over here. But
I think everybody is in kind of a unique position. But if somebody does have the ability and the resources and the temperament for it,
sure.
I think they should consider it. Now, through that consideration, they may decide, you know, it really isn't right for me at this time. And others will say, you know, I'm looking for good, wise, honest people. I think I am one. I'm looking for people who will support certain principles that I believe in. Well, I think I am one of those.
Okay, right.
I believe that there are others who are looking for the same thing and they're not finding it. Maybe I'm the person they're looking for. And that you need to do that in a humble way.
Right.
You can't think that you're, you know, God's gift to the community. On the other hand,
some politicians are popping in my mind, but yeah, I won't mention any names.
On the other hand, I don't think we hide our light under bushels either. I think if we have a talent or an ability to improve our community, if we can support the principles, if we can, you know, support the other principles we believe in, if nothing else, running for office gives the voter an opportunity to express support for something they believe in or someone they believe in, rather than just the lesser of two evils.
Yes.
We have candidates today who are running in, you know, either party, and they've admitted that they don't believe they'll ever win, but they are running because this gives them a platform for expressing their opinion. I know a Republican candidate for president right now is running expressly because he is saddened that no one, even in the Republican Party, has seriously addressed the issue of national debt.
Okay.
He doesn't believe he'll win the presidency.
Right.
It would be the longest shot that anybody could imagine. But by being there and having
right.
a microphone in his face from time to time, he can express that concern that even those who ran on limited government and limiting you know, debt haven't acted. We need to find people who will act.
That is so
now
right.
he's able to do that. So yes, members of my church, other churches, I do encourage them to consider whether they should run. Many will decide no, but some, when they're prayerful about it and in the quiet moments when they can truly consider it, will consider, yes, I should. And whether they win or not, I think they've done a good thing.
Right. And the key theme or word that keeps coming to my mind listening to you, Mr. Moran, is using your influence. That's the word that keeps coming to my mind as you're describing all this. That man you were describing, or woman, I don't even know who it is, but they're gaining influence in society.
Right.
You know? And you've run, let me ask you this, because as our guest, you're a little bit of a unique guest for us, because you both have your foot, if you will, in the fact that you're part of a religious community, but you also have had your foot in the governing official realm, pursuing a role, and it was a state legislative office, is that correct?
Right.
So could you tell the community, shifting gears a little bit from the religious discussion to the political running, if the folks say, you know, that might be me, just give us your one top of mind piece of advice for these folks that you think that man you wish you would have known when you jumped in.
Wow. There's the long list.
I know.
Only the one.
That's a tough one.
I guess I would want everyone to remember that the politics, the root of the word politics is pole, which has to do with people. A good politician is someone who can unite people around a cause. If you're looking at a city councilman, and you know you're going to vote for this candidate for city council because they're willing to put a stoplight at this intersection where 15 kids have been killed in the last 5 years, because there's just no stoplight and people are running and whatever. If you vote for that person, it's because he or she has been able to rally you, to unite you with others who feel the same way and are going to promote that individual because of what they can accomplish. Hmm. So if you're going to run for office, you need to learn to work with people. You need to work with people who are already in power, already in influence. You need to be able to reach out to those who feel marginalized and bring them in. You need to reach out to those who have less popular ideas and understand them and reach out and show why your ideas and their ideas can actually work together to some degree. Mm. I believe in compromise. I don't necessarily believe in the compromise of principles.
We would agree with that.
But there are things that...
Well, can I interject something real quick?
Yes, please.
Because what you're saying, it resonates very much with us in the fact that we can never compromise principle, like you said. But there are other issues that good people can disagree on.
Yeah.
So, for example, the amount of involvement that the government should have in helping the poor. Let's take that as an example. Good people can disagree on to what degree does the government have a role in that certain... that end. We would argue that if you're going to support the taking of innocent life, that's not good morals. That's not good people. That's our position. But because it's a fundamental moral principle, that's where. But when we're talking about other issues, like you're saying, if you walk in the door and say, it's got to be my way or the highway, and it's got to be a red stoplight, and we've got to have cameras here and do every little thing, or you're going to take your marbles and go home.
Yeah.
It's not going to work, right?
Well, and we have to recognize that we don't necessarily make all the improvements we want at one time.
No, good. So true.
Let's take your example of how much should government be helping the needy. There are some who say the government shouldn't be involved in that at all, especially
Correct.
Our federal government.
That's right.
Maybe a state or a city government should, or a county, but we're in the Constitution to say we can give money to poor people, right? At the federal level. The current state is we give billions upon billions upon billions every year. Mm-hmm. Are we going to, if you had that position that the federal government shouldn't be involved in that, do you hold out and say it's all or nothing?
Right.
Or are you willing to take a short, a small cut?
Exactly.
And move forward. And the way you do that, by the way, is not saying that caring for the poor and needy is not a good thing.
Right.
You propose other ways that we can care for the poor and the needy, and you rally people to that cause.
Very good.
If you really believe that your church should have the fundamental responsibility for caring for the poor families in your neighborhood, then say it and prove it and rally your church.
Show it. Yeah.
Rally your church and say we don't need the county welfare assistance or the federal welfare assistance because we can do it ourselves. But that's My initial point is politics is about people. Mm. And if you're going to be effective in politics, you need to learn to rally people.
That's good.
And the first example of that is your actual campaign, your election. If you can't get people to vote for you, then how are you going to get them to support you when you start making decisions that may not be popular?
Exactly. If you can't get them to vote for you, it's going to be a short career.
That's right. Mine was very short.
Oh, boy. So we know that citizens who care deeply about the pillar principles often hold very divergent theological perspectives, or they've got no theological view at all.
Right.
And so in your view, should these pillar citizens work together to advance our principles that we share? And if so, on what basis? In other words, how can they do so without compromising, what's most important to them, their beliefs, their faith?
Right. We've addressed some of that already. The thought of divergent views I mean, that just means we're human. You know, I've already expressed that my views don't stay the same. You know, to think that my views and your views are always going to be perfectly aligned is kind of foolish. You know, on what basis do we unite? We unite on the basis of the things we agree on.
Okay.
If we believe that parents have the right to teach their children or to guide the teaching of their children or those kinds of things, then whether you believe in a trinity and I believe in something different really shouldn't interfere on that work.
Right.
By working together to support parents, I'm not acknowledging that I believe that your views on other things are right.
Yes, thank you.
And I believe that goes across all the religious spectrum. You know, I personally believe in a God who is a personal God who is my father. And because of that, whether you think so or not, I believe he's your father.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether you call him Father or God or Allah or any other name, mm-hmm. I personally believe that individual is is the same God that I worship. Now, we may understand him very differently. Mm-hmm. And in reality, next year or next decade, I may understand him even differently than I do today because I'm still learning.
Mm-hmm.
Those differences shouldn't get in the way of us working on things that we agree on.
Exactly.
You know, if we all agree there should be a stop sign at this corner, I don't care if you're Jewish or Christian or whatever, let's put a stop sign up.
Right.
But let's not say, well, Christians want a stop sign, so I don't want a stop sign.
Don't we often see this, as ridiculous as it is, and I have a hard time not laughing about the whole idea, but sometimes I laugh because they say either laugh or cry.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of laughing about this issue. But in all seriousness, isn't it true that in practice we basically operate that way as religious communities a lot of times?
I think there's a strong tendency to feel that when others don't believe the way you believe, that they're somehow attacking you.
Right.
And that's not totally unfounded. There have been people who have attacked people because they didn't believe the same.
Well, sure, yeah.
But I think we ought to be well past that.
Mm-hmm.
We should all denounce attacks based on faith and so forth. I believe in agency. I believe you should be able to believe and worship the way you want to, even if it's not what I believe in worship.
Right.
I hope you'll accord me the same benefit.
Exactly.
And if we do, then let's look at the other things that we have. And should there be stop signs, or you know, should we fund hospitals or not? Right? You know, and let's make the picture bigger. Let's not look at just do I support schools, but let's ask, do I support the education of children?
Right.
And if I do, can I find the most effective way to do that?
Well said.
Whether it be my local public school, or whether it be homeschooling, or a church school, or maybe we just enhance all of the online educational opportunities, and that's what we fund. But let's back up to the real question: do I support educating children, and for what purpose?
Mm.
If it's a governmental purpose, then can we acknowledge what that is? And I fundamentally believe that the real reason for educating children is so they can become, in a public sense, is so they can be good, upstanding citizens. Eventually, they are going to run our nation.
Right.
Right? If they're not trained in how to do that, then we've just failed our nation.
Wow.
Anything that we hold valuable in our government can disappear overnight if we don't train up a generation that can support it. Now, so if we acknowledge that and recognize that that's the purpose of education, then we can unite across all kinds of divergent views to support that cause. And then we can debate whether there should be publicly funded schools and teachers and so forth, or whether it should all be private, or whether we do it some other way, or is there a mix? And do we allow religious principles to be taught along with the civic principles and so forth? Or do we recognize that they're not independent? That civic principles include religious principles. That's the debate. And then we can debate that on military spending, and we can debate
all
it on
things.
All kinds of things, and especially on do we support traditional families, parental rights, religious liberty, and the rights of the unborn.
Right. So well said, Mr. Marin. And doesn't that, what you just beautifully described there, doesn't that also then enable and cause to flourish the ability of different religious communities to actually, they can then debate their theological differences in healthy ways?
I would hope so.
Most religious communities have a desire to reach out, spread whatever it is that they believe. So I would argue, obviously, I have my religious beliefs, you have yours, but rather than speaking spitefully about one another and shooting arrows, so to speak, hopefully not literally, but in our communities, you know, it forms a basis of a relationship that we can have a respectful dialogue
right.
about important theological differences, which is a healthy thing,
right.
I think.
Well, how can you actually effectively communicate and persuade on
persuade.
Those
exactly.
kinds of things if you really don't know the other person's view?
That's my point, yeah.
Right?
I don't think you can.
Right.
So it's just, again, and folks that have seen the videos as of late will kind of recognize this as a theme, but
yeah.
I think it's so important to keep emphasizing we're not talking about unity of faith here when we talk about the Pillar Citizen community.
Yeah.
We can work across diverse perspectives, but then from those relationships, maybe then you will be able to reach people
perhaps
in a more meaningful
yeah.
way. Not that that's the whole point necessarily, but it could happen more likely.
Well, and let's talk about a unity of faith for just a moment.
Okay.
In some sense, we are talking about a unity of faith. You know, if our neighborhood really believes there should be a stop sign on the corner, then we're united in our belief on that one principle.
Okay, and that
right?
belief of that piece. Okay.
So let's let that unite us. If we both believe that traditional families need to be supported and or defended, we don't want the community attacking what has been a pillar of our society forever.
Yeah.
If you believe that and I believe that, then we're united
right.
on that belief. That's a unity of faith.
Okay, right, from that
right?
From that perspective. Yes.
Now, we may not believe all things together, but we at least believe that, and we can unite on that.
Excellent. Very good. So as we wrap up, what would be any final thoughts for us as it relates to these pillar principles?
I think we each need to evaluate what is important to us. We need to ask ourselves, why is it important? We need to look at, you know, history and understand, you know, how institutions have evolved and come to where they are. With those who are fighting against some of these principles, I would ask them to ask, you know, why was the fence erected before they want to tear it down? We talk about, you know, progressive versus conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Progressives tend, in my view, to seek change almost for change's sake.
Okay.
A conservative tends to want to hold on to what we have because what we has worked
okay.
for a long time. And without an understanding of why to change it, and with real confidence that changing this one thing is going to be better, then I tend to resist change. Now, if I am going to embrace change, I want to embrace it in a small way first.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than passing federal legislation which binds everybody to the same thing, why don't we try it in a state or something?
Yes.
And see how it works. And if other states agree that, hey, that's a good approach, then we tend to adopt it. And maybe over time, all 50 states,
right.
or all 60
happens.
By then,
that's definitely happening.
You know, will agree and they will adopt it, and we didn't need federal legislation for it. Maybe the same thing in a state. You know, if people in a certain county feel something is effective and good for them, maybe they should try it. But do we have to pass a state law
okay.
requiring everybody to do that?
Okay.
Maybe not. And if other counties say, wow, it worked really well for, you know, Denver County, let's try it for Larimer or whatever it might be,
yeah.
then they're free to do that. So I feel the same with the pillar principles. For thousands of years in recorded history, families have been the center of community. Anything that's good that's happened, whether it be raising up a strong leader or raising up those who would defend their lands, you know, when a war comes,
mm-hmm.
it's because of the principles that have been brought to their children from their parents. It's because of the support of family, extended family, extending, you know, economic, you know, financial, health support, whatever needed. If there's a death in the family gathers to fill in. You know, we talk about traditional family being the ideal, but if a father is killed in battle,
right,
now you don't have the ideal family. But it is yet the family and those who support the family that reach out to fill in the gaps of the ideal.
That's right.
I believe we all need to reflect on these kinds of things and ask, when people are proposing changes, especially changes that seem to be extreme, why? Mm. What is the purpose for it? And I don't want to minimize the well-intentioned efforts of people trying to do good. But just because I want to do good doesn't mean that what I'm going to try will end up being good.
That's true.
And so let's be careful about what we implement. We need to be careful when we apply support to various principles to ask ourselves why. And if somebody is trying to oppose that, why?
Right.
And even if I agree that their motive is right, let's be a little cautious. Right. Let's go carefully.
Okay.
I personally believe that the principles we talked about here have been proven for generations, thousands of years. I don't see a good reason to be attacking them. Matter of fact, they've worked so well, and whenever they've been truly applied, I want to share them with other people so that they know that if you want to have a good, strong life, a happy community,
yes,
try these.
It's good. It's good. Mr. Rain, thank you for taking the time today to be with us, share your insights, and give us some things to consider. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Aaron Robertson with the Patriot League, and I'm inviting you to join the Pillar Citizen community at pillarcitizen.com so that together we can work to not only defend our shared pillar principles, but to advance them as well. So on behalf of our entire leadership team, I'd like to thank you for watching The Spotlight.